Yeah. Check. Keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage. And I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share. That same type of feeling when you're feeling in flare. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV and the antimedia.org/radio. Thank you all for tuning in. I'm super happy to be back with you. Sorry I didn't catch you on Monday. I took the day off. Needed a day to just recollect my energies and stuff with all this crazy news. It'll really take it out of you if you're not careful. Anyway, I'm really happy to be back. I think we're ready to go through a really crazy show tonight. All kinds of stuff going on. We're gonna go back and revisit on Memorial Day since we took Monday off and all. So we're gonna talk about that. I have a special guest in the studio tonight. Who is actually a veteran of Afghanistan. We'll just call him Johnny, and we'll leave it at that. But he's going to be in the studio with me tonight to have some comments on Memorial Day and, you know, all kinds of different things that we're going to be talking about. I'll get your opinion as a veteran on some of this other news stories and stuff that we're going to be covering. And, you know, most of the stuff that we're covering tonight, you can find it over on theantimedia.org. You can follow along. I'll tell you the titles of the articles. You can click on them. You can see the links and all the sources and all that stuff. You know, so that way you're not just taking our word for it. You're actually, you know, we're providing you with resources, sources, citations, stuff you could research later if you find it interesting, if you want to dig more into it, you know, all that good stuff. We're also joined on the line by my longtime co-host, DB Schwartz. What's up, DB?
Not a whole lot, Nick. Just want to say to all the vets, man, you guys did a pretty hard job out there, and all the people that lost their lives for something we're starting to realize is kind of been a sham in a lot of ways. It's just kind of disheartening. So I have to say again, man, I hope the vets, one of the biggest things they could do is help us kind of take this thing back.
Yeah, man. And we're going to be talking a little bit about that tonight, in fact, because a lot of stuff went on Memorial Day. We had a bunch of good stories on the anti-media that I hope everybody got to see. We're going to go over some of those, and we're going to relate it back to a situation that actually happened to me personally last night as well. So, I mean, the first story, I wanted to bring Claire in on, but she's not on the line yet. I'm not sure if she's going to join us. She was supposed to, but she may not. She had a great story on the anti-media on Memorial Day, which was basically making the argument that, you know, these politicians love to go around and pretend that they give a shit about the troops and pretend that they do this. And they, you know, like if you say you don't support the troops as like a politician, you're done. Your career is finished. So every single one of them is like, yeah, I support the troops. I'll do whatever it takes. But, you know, the truth of the matter is much different. I mean, the VA is rife with corruption. I mean, just a couple of years ago, there was just a huge scandal at the VA, and a bunch of heads rolled because of it. And you know, the main gist of the article that Claire wrote the other day is that the way to honor the people that have died in wars, and you know, some of them people may justify, some of them other people may not. Like the war in Iraq is obviously, you know, was based on bad information, if not like outright lying by Bush and his administration and officials within that administration. You know, and so people that lost their lives in Iraq, and you know, it's not even over. The Americans are still dying in Iraq. In fact, we have another article on the anti-media that talks about that that we posted earlier today. So you can check that out too, because it's still going on. It's ongoing. So the argument made here is that the way to honor fallen vets on Memorial Day is to stop sending current military people into wars that many times aren't needed, like Iraq, you know. And so it's a very simple argument, but it's something that these damn politicians seem to not be able to get through their heads, because they love to go out there and say, oh, we support the troops and we'll do this and we'll do that for the military. Meanwhile, they don't actually do the work behind the scenes to like help take care of the veterans once they're out of the military. And secondly, they send them into many times wars that aren't even, you know, justified or not really needed, or down to the more basic point, wars that aren't defending the United States. You know, they're wars that are, you know, they're going to Libya, they're going to Yemen, they're going to Syria, they're going to Iraq. How, in which way are these wars defending the United States, right? You know, and this is a question that, you know, I think we need to start asking of these politicians, because they have no problem sending people into harm's way. But once they're done sending them in the harm's way, they don't do the work that's needed to take care of them after that. And secondly, they don't do the homework before sending them in the harm's way to find out if it's actually needed to defend the United States. Johnny, I want to get your opinion on that. I mean, what do you make of that argument?
Well, in my opinion, it's more primarily based on fact. You know, you got to think, a lot of these politicians that send us overseas, you know, they do behind the scenes investments in the stock market, and they really just they invest in these military contracting companies and these subsidiaries in order to basically project the war before it even happens.
I mean, the perfect example of that is Dick Cheney and Halliburton, right? Dick Cheney was like a former executive at Halliburton, and then he left that to go become vice president, and then his company, Halliburton, wound up making, what was it, like over $30 billion in contracting out of Iraq alone?
Right.
I think it was over 45 at last count, Nick, and still growing.
Yep. They, you know, their self-reliant interest on how they make money is really just this Ponzi scheme of really just utterly trying to control everything, you know, and they don't care about they don't care about us going overseas. You know, the real underlying issue is obviously the fact that these wars need to stop. And you know, having experienced myself, you know, I can remember when I was overseas in Afghanistan, I was overseas and I was in a firefight, and after we had basically killed the enemy, you know, the enemy we're perpetuated to believe is just, you know, these overwhelmingly powerful terrorists, you know, in reality, they're just hillmen or, you know, rebels, you know, basically just in the hillsides that we're killing. And I can remember after we got into this firefight, we had killed six jihadis, and then we had basically searched their bodies. And after we had searched their bodies, we found currency that they had, you know, a lot of money, basically. And I can remember that when I had found the money, and my brother-in-arms, who was with me at the time, when he had found some money, we had to give it to our squad leader, and he told us it just went directly to the chain of command. It just went to the guy on top, you know. And that's just one instance of how they profit off of war in terms of just, you know, the basic ground, like us on the ground, on the front lines.
Yeah, you know, wars back in the day, you know, back in the days of, you know, these classical empires and stuff, when people, you know, the Roman Empire, the British Empire, these guys would go out there, and it was no bullshit, you know. It was, the British Empire wasn't going and conquering India and telling people, hey, we're going to conquer India because India's not free enough. We're going to go give them democracy. They're saying, look, we're going to conquer India because they got a bunch of resources and we're going to take their shit, right?
Right.
I mean, those are how empires used to work. And the British people at the time, I'm sure for the most part, a lot of the citizens and stuff were like, okay, you know, we're going to benefit from that. Fuck, screw it. Do it. But now we're told, okay, no, we're not going to Iraq to take their resources or secure the oil. we're going because they have bad government and we're going to go protect them from their bad government and stuff. You know, the oil is just, you know, the fact that we're going to make a ton of money as a byproduct, you know, that's just coincidence. That's not why we're going. But, you know, we're led to believe here. And this to me is what blows my mind. The fact that people believe this shit is that all of a sudden the United States is the first empire in the world that isn't conquering countries because they're trying to take their shit. We're conquering countries because we want to spend money to give them freedom. It's like, wait, since when did the definition of empire like change? Or is it just, or did the definition not change and the rhetoric just changed? Where now it's like, okay, look, maybe the people after, maybe it's because after the 60s, the politicians realized, shit, war isn't that popular in the United States. There's a huge anti-war movement. People don't want us going overseas, fighting these wars and stuff. And back then it was the Cold War, and you know, we're trying to prevent the spread of communism and stuff. And that's, you know, kind of a, it's, it, you know, in theory, it's kind of like a valiant cause and all that. But they changed the rhetoric, and instead of saying, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to take people's stuff, it's like, no, we're going to give them freedom. Now, Afghanistan, which is the war that you fought in,
correct?
That's a little something different, because that war was fought because, you know, it was retribution for the 9/11 attacks and stuff like that. And so that war, you know, even the most vehemently anti-war politicians like Ron Paul supported that intervention. But Iraq and the stuff following, our military intervention going on in Syria, Libya, Somalia, Yemen, you know, all these other countries in the Middle East that we have going on right now, we're being misled. It's not retribution. It's not revenge. We're being told that we're actually going there to give the people freedom and stuff. When the reality is, if you look at the countries that we've toppled in the Middle East, they're not more free. In fact, they're more messed up. I mean, Iraq, it was branded Operation Iraqi Freedom. That was what it was called. And we're going to go over there. We're going to give them freedom. And, you know, Saddam Hussein's a bad guy. And I'm not disagreeing. Saddam Hussein was a bad guy. But Iraq right now is in much more turmoil. Much more lives have been lost. The amount of freedom is not increased over there. In fact, the people in Iraq are on the verge of revolution because they're already so fed up with the U.S.-backed government that we put in place. So, I mean, I think one thing, Johnny, that I wanted to ask you is, you know, what do you make of this argument that the government, and especially the Obama regime, I think Bush was more honest about it. Bush was, you know, at least with in many ways, he was more honest about it. But Obama is really, really good, and the Democrats are really, really good at pretending that we're going and giving freedom and democracy to people. I mean, do you think that's the case, or are they literally just lying to us? What do you think?
I think they're honestly just lying to us, and the reality is, plain and simple, they don't care about democracy. I mean, to really put it into perspective, you know, they really try to make it seem like everything that's happening is just happening for, like you said, like for democracy or for a political agenda. And the reality is, it's not the political agenda so much that they're trying to use. They're trying to condition people through the populace, whether that's through the media, the mainstream media, or whether that's through the newspaper, which is highly outdated now. You know, they're basically, in my opinion, trying to condition people to believe in certain aspects of the political agendas that we're fed to believe themselves. You know, and the reality is these wars are completely unjust. I mean, you get back from war, and then, you know, in my instance, we were getting in firefights with Pakistanis almost every single day. And I got to be honest, when I came back and I looked at the mainstream media, I think it was Fox News at the time, on a billboard in an airport, they were just sitting there saying that we need to protect the interests of the Pakistanis, and we need to protect them because they're our secret ally in Southwest Asia conflict. And the reality was, you know, here I am coming back from war, getting into firefights with Pakistanis and militants almost every single day. And, you know, they just, in reality, lied straight in front of the American people, you know? And that really hit me hard when I came back from war, because I didn't know what to believe now. You know, I'm getting lied to from my chain of command. I'm getting lied to by the media that's supposed to be helping me, you know? And I think another instance of this also occurring, you can date back to the Vietnam War when basically the troops going through Ho Chi Minh Trail tried to advance into Laos to prevent the northern Vietnamese from taking positions in the Ho Chi Minh Trail through the Laotian, I can't remember exactly what the road is leading up through Ho Chi Minh Trail to Laos, but I can remember that basically we were trying to establish a front line to keep the Laotian North Viet Cong from coming into the Vietnamese territory that the United States had already occupied. And now, you know, here these soldiers like myself are coming back, and the media was completely covering it up and saying, oh no, there's no conflict in Laos, there's no, you know, there's absolutely no reason for us to be thinking that Laos is any problem in Asia, Southeast Asia at the time. And to me, experiencing that and then having the same exact thing happen to, you know, my brothers in arms and sisters in arms who were overseas, you know, 50, 60 years ago, and then having experience it myself, is just, all they're doing really is conditioning the populace of the United States to really believe in a secular ideal in terms of war and conflict in different countries, so that in the background they can pursue their interests, which is to essentially just profit off of war and profiteering itself.
So I want to bring DB into this because, DB, you've been following the Democratic race pretty closely and stuff. And you know, Hillary Clinton, one of her big talking points is especially with Libya, because, you know, she's really owned up to the Libya thing, and she's proud of that intervention. She's really takes pride in that, and she claims that the reason why is because they had democratic elections shortly after the United States helped kill Gaddafi, the dictator of Libya. Now, that may be true that they actually did have elections. We don't know how legitimate those elections were. But those elections were not considered legitimate by the majority of Libyans, and therefore you have a multi-faction civil war going on in Libya where there's like a dozen separate governments now vying for control of the country. And in fact, I mean, the country is just literally splitting apart east and west, and Benghazi and Tripoli, and they're all fracturing apart right now. Who knows if it's ever going to be brought back together? Gaddafi was the only guy, you know, that was able to hold that place together and keep it unified and somewhat peaceful and prosperous. In fact, Libya had the highest standard of living in the entire continent of Africa before we conquered him. You know, and then Obama, like I already mentioned, he's pretty much mastered the craft of selling military intervention as democratic interventions and stuff like that. But, you know, Clinton in particular, she claims to be so hawkish on foreign policy because there are so many bad guys around the world that we just need to go bomb their countries to give them freedom and to give them democracy. And she really makes that a big pillar of her record on foreign policy, which anyone can look at it and see that it's hawkish. But at the same time, her own election in the United States right now is being called into question because it's like, wait, the superdelegates, the corruption, the miscounted votes, the coin flips, the voting machines. She's telling everybody we got to bomb countries to bring them democracy. Meanwhile, our own democracy at home is being called into question. DB, I mean, what can you make of this?
Dude, I mean, Libya is just one more, I guess, domino that needs to fall before we can begin to start to topple the last two empires that really can, you know, give us any resistance, which is China and Russia. And it's a delicate maneuver to play either them against each other or fight them one at a time, not both. And so I guess we've made the decision, probably due to economics, that we're going to go after Russia first. So what was Libya? A lot of people don't understand what Libya was. Libya was not just oil to Italy or the southern part of Europe. Libya was actually a pipeline to basically bring arms in, and that's what Tripoli became. Tripoli became the port town where all of the illegal arms going to all of these proxy armies became, and it started the civil war, essentially, was what happened. When people found out what was going on, especially Gaddafi, you know, they tried to put a stop to it, and that's always a no-no when you stop a CIA weapons operation. And in a sense, they did split the country in two. They got people from Benghazi, which was the oil-producing region, which had paid taxes to Tripoli forever, and which was underrepresented and basically treated like crap. Well, they got all these arms themselves, and then they rose up, and they took Gaddafi out, and they splintered the country, and that was the whole goal all along. And the thing that mucked it up was, well, Ambassador Stevens, he got caught. I mean, he got caught in a bad position where he found that out, and he wanted to release that information, and they called in the goons.
And now he's another American dead overseas for geopolitics.
One of countless. And what it did was it screwed the proxy war up because, you know, I mean, our own special forces don't want to fight for this machine anymore.
No. So, DB, what do you make of this argument, though, from Hillary Clinton that, like, her hawkish policies in the Middle East is to spread democracy? Meanwhile, her election currently is being called into question as being undemocratic.
Yeah, I think you need to delve more into her and understand what she is more than who she is. She represents a deal made actually at the fall of the Ottoman Empire. You can research her history. She's actually Turkish royalty. She's kind of a plant in a way where we've been beholden to the Ottoman Empire that splintered after World War I, which we won. A lot of people don't know America won by basically the weirdest way possible, which was we spread the Spanish flu and wiped everyone out in Europe. And a bunch of people were left in the oil-producing regions. So we made a deal with the devil, man. I mean, we've been beholden to Turkey to a degree and Saudi Arabia almost wholly for, God, at least eight, nine decades.
Interesting. I never heard that theory before, but it is interesting. But to me, I mean, just looking at it from a plain perspective here, I mean, Hillary Clinton is she's a huge hypocrite. She pretends that we're dropping bombs to spread democracy. Meanwhile, I mean, honestly, she should be advocating the intervention, military intervention in Washington, D.C., because that's the corruption that we need to deal with here domestically.
Who do we always attack, too? That's another question, and I know Johnny can answer that way more accurately than either of us, but we don't attack, you know, specific groups over there. We attack surgically. Like, we're trying to take out specific groups within groups. I mean, we have a whole agenda going on beyond just total war or grabbing resources.
Right, definitely.
Interesting. So I got a few more points I want to make on this Memorial Day stuff. First, I want to bring Manny Aguilar into the conversation. I think Manny's joining us on the line. Manny, are you over there?
What's up there, Nick? How you doing?
What's up, Manny? Hanging in there, man. I'm chilling out here in Arizona right now with my friend Johnny, who happens to be a veteran that served in Afghanistan. We're going back to the Memorial Day theme because I took Monday off. But I wanted to get an update from you first. About what's going on with the deported veterans, because this is another issue that we need to talk about when we talk about the Memorial Day thing, because as the article Claire mentioned, it's if we're going to talk about Memorial Day, it's not just about the guys that are dead that have passed on, it's also the guys that are still living that have served, and why are they being neglected, and why are they not being treated well, and why are they also being put in harm's way? Well, Manny, you're really close to the Deported Veterans organization down in Tijuana. And these are guys that have served in the U.S. Armed Forces that later on, you know, they were promised citizenship and they were promised a bunch of stuff. They come back home after fighting in Vietnam. They you know, they have PTSD, or they have Gulf War Syndrome, or they have issues. They run into a problem with the law. And then all of a sudden the U.S. government says, you know what, get them the hell out of the country. We don't want them anymore. And they deport them and they can never come back. After doing, you know, serving, putting their life on the line in places like Vietnam and all these other places. Do you have any updates on the deported veterans?
Yeah, actually I do. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I saw the deal that you went through with La Migra. That's why I said, welcome to my world, you know. And you and Johnny are down there with in the territory of Joe Arpaio. So don't mess with Joe Arpaio, okay?
Okay. trying to avoid that guy.
But I will say one thing. The update was I was back down there. I hope Nick will join us. There's going to be a press conference on July 7th at noontime at the bunker, because 10 soldiers are going to turn themselves in for basically a medical, medical status, and they're going to ask for, to be, under that status that they're going to be.
Well, like diplomatic immunity or something like that?
Thank you for the word. Thank you for the word. That's what I was thinking. Diplomatic, medical, is what they're going to be under. And 10 of them are turning themselves in, including Hector, which happens to be the director of the bunker, and he was in the airborne and all that. And so that's going to happen July 7th. The press conference is going to be July 7th, and then they're going to turn themselves in July 8th, the following day, and stuff like that. And I'm hoping to be down there actually sleeping at the bunker that day so that I can actually follow them all the way to the border and stuff like that. And that's what the update is. Now, one of the things is that they were promised U.S. citizenship and stuff like that. The problem is that they trusted this government, and they never put it in writing. So it was just a verbal agreement. Well, verbal agreement doesn't count with the U.S. government and stuff like that, and that's the way it is, So so that's the update and stuff like that. The other update as a veteran, because I'm a veteran myself, is that I couldn't believe that Friday we have veterans that all of a sudden are supporting Trump. Somewhere along the line, I think he made a donation to the veterans or something, because, I mean, that's something Trump has shitted on all these veterans and stuff like that, So if anybody was looking for love at this protest with Donald Trump, you're not going to find it, because it was so much hate out there, it's not even funny. But I don't understand this veterans for Donald Trump, it just boggles me still, I just can't believe it. And so those are the updates that are going on, down there in San Diego and also at the bunker. So I hope that everybody down there, all the way to Arizona, wherever, but will know that the veterans will be turning themselves in, 10 of them and stuff like that, because they cannot get VA service while they're in Mexico. They can go to the VA, but the problem is no VA down there, and if they can't come across the border, they're not going to get no medical, and a lot of them are dying, and that's the sad thing that I have to report. A lot of them have died and stuff like that. Now, the only positive thing that has come out of the bunker, which just created a movement, is Danielle, one of the veterans, finally became a U.S. citizen. He fought and he won. So at least the ball got rolling with his, acceptance of becoming a U.S. citizen after serving his country and stuff like that. And right now, the only way they can come across legally, if they die, then they can come across and get buried. But that's not the way that we should be receiving these veterans.
Yeah. Then they get VA benefits.
Yeah, then they get buried at the military. God, I can't even remember the name of the damn place where they buried.
Arlington
or one of these. I don't know. I can't remember the damn.
Yeah, it's name. Arlington West, I believe.
The military cemeteries. There you go. That's the thing, dude. They sell us these wars and crap, and they tell people they're going to go over there and do stuff, and they're going to, whether it's spreading freedom. And then the big giant myth to me, and I want to get your guys' perspective on, when was the last time the United States really did fight a war to protect our freedom? Like, they tell you that we're going to Iraq to protect our free speech and to protect our freedom and stuff. I got a personal situation happened to me last night that I want to bring up, but first I want to throw this out there to the round table, and I'm going to start here with Johnny. I mean, when was the last war that the United States fought where they actually fought a defensive war to protect the freedom and the safety of the United States?
I would have to say most likely the Civil War, because that's specifically centered within the United States itself. I'm not saying I promote any type of conflict or war within the United States itself, but to be realistic, I mean, ever since the Civil War, almost every single war has been harbored by a false flag operation and completely started just for either a resource grab or for attempting to support a political agenda from elitists within the control of the...
Yeah, I mean, World War I was the last real big, was the first really big war after the Civil War, and the United States really didn't have any business going in there. That was done. Some backdoor dealing was done there, and it got us into that. Now, after World War I, so many people died, so many Americans died after World War I that the country became anti-war, completely anti-war, and World War II they were trying to sell it to the people, and nobody was buying into it. And then Pearl Harbor happens, and then all of a sudden it's like, okay, there we go, there's our ticket in, you know. But I mean, there you can make the argument that World War One was kind of like a preemptive defense of our freedom, because, you know, the encroaching Japanese and Nazi empires that could, you know, eventually, maybe one day, eventually threaten our freedom and stuff like that. You know, I guess that argument can be made. I don't want to, you know, get too deep into that argument. Go ahead, DB. What were you going to say?
Oh, I don't know, man. Sometimes I just think it's laughable when you really look back at it, because America really was the Saudi Arabia of the 30s and had basically all the reserves and had the biggest air force. And I mean, we were invasion proof unless somebody decided to use the atom bomb on us. But I mean, then we could retaliate. So we got involved. We goaded the Japanese in. I mean, on one point, it was a good thing, though, because of the Manchurian, the rape of Nanking and the Manchurian debacle they did. But yeah, dude, I think Johnny's kind of right. Like, we really didn't fight for freedom since, because since that, we've been this corporate republic. We've been fighting under a constitution, and it really, really just really does apply to rich, wealthy landowners when it's really broken down. So that's really what it is.
I mean, the U.S. Constitution it's kind of just an extension of the Magna Carta, which basically granted rights to the lords. You know, it did take away power from the crown, but really it granted rights to the lords and not to the serfs.
Now, so it granted rights to a bunch of degenerates instead, and that's what we got now.
And, you know, the majority of the population is made up by serfs, not by lords. You know what I'm saying? I mean, the modern-day lords are like, you know, CEOs and people that have a lot of money and that kind of thing. These are like the modern-day lords. They've just evolved. The rhetoric, they changed from the lords of old to the 1% of new, or whatever you want to call these guys, oligarchs or whatever you want to call them.
Right.
You know, they play the same role. They just have new names, very convenient names that aren't nearly as bad as a lord.
They're in a weird position, too, because of their own document that was supposed to protect them by keeping them armed, they let the whole populace stay armed. So they're kind of like in this weird position where they can never really become full fascist because we're armed. And if they tried to disarm us, it would actually open up like an opportunity for their enemies, which is Russia and China, to like hit them at the same time as they were trying to oppress us. So they're stuck in this weird position right now.
Most definitely.
So, you know, the reason I asked that question, and I got to get over to Manny, too. Manny, what do you make of this, dude? When's the last time the United States fought a war for actually for freedom?
Well, actually, other than the Civil War, I would say zero and stuff like that. They definitely try to control the whole country, you know, and one of the things people don't understand is this country does want to control the world, because one of the questions I ask people all the time, okay, how many bases do we have around the world? 900. Well, name me one country that has a base here in this country. And they look at me and they say, oh, I said, your answer is zero, you know, and stuff like that, you know. And so those are the things that we need to educate people on, because there's a lot of people that just can't believe what, you know, what the country is really all about. And I found out first thing on Friday, for all these ignorant people, you know, wearing their hats, make America better. Well, for anybody that uses America, no disrespect to anybody, but America's a continent, it's not a country. You know what I mean?
It's become so normalized, man. It's like you're right. I mean, if you ask a school kid and you say, "Oh, well, you know, how many places does the United States have military presence?" And people that have taken history and stuff in high school, they may know that. Okay, yeah, we have troops stationed in Japan. We've got troops stationed in Germany, and we've got troops stationed in South Korea. Those are like the main ones that people know about for the most part, right? But you're right, though. Like, what country has like acknowledged military bases within the United States? Nobody. I mean, there may be some secret stuff going on that that's not, you know, mainstream knowledge and stuff. Who knows? But there's no acknowledged like Russian military base or German military base or Japanese or South Korean or Mexican military base on U.S. soil, yet it's like completely routine for us to have a base in Colombia, for us to have a base in South America, all over in a bunch of different countries down there, in Peru and Chile and all these places. All throughout Europe, Italy, North Africa, Somalia, all throughout the Middle East, all around the countries that we have, you know, tensions with, like Russia is like completely circled in. We're working on getting China completely circled in. Completely normal.
Doesn't China have like massive bases in Mexico?
I mean, I'm not for sure about it. They may. It's not like, it's not the kind of stuff where it's like public record. You know what I mean? So, it's something that is possible. Go ahead, Johnny.
I actually think that might actually be possible because where I'm at right now in Arizona, there's a lot of trains that come directly from Mexico to the United States, and I have to definitely say that the majority, if not, I want to say at least 80 to 90% of those boxcars coming through the trains, coming from Mexico, they're all Chinese-owned companies and corporations.
Interesting. Hard to say. All right, so the point I was trying to get to here is that besides spreading freedom around the world and democracy building and nation building and all the crap they tell us they're doing, the other main talking point here is that, you know, they're protecting our freedom in the United States. That's the reason we got troops in Germany. That's why we got troops in South Korea, Japan, Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, Yemen, Syria. I mean, you name the country. The reason they're there is because they're protecting our freedom in the United States. That's the talking point, right? That's what they tell us.
Right.
Last night, I was trying to practice my freedom. I'm trying to drive from San Diego, California, where I live, to come visit you here in Arizona, Johnny. And my freedom was denied.
Right.
I got my freedom denied. I pulled in on the freeway. I wasn't crossing the border. I was going down the 8 freeway inside of the United States. I pull in to what I didn't see coming, but it turned out to be a Department of Homeland Security checkpoint on the freeway in the United States. They come up to my car. The guy, immediately seeing that I had a brown tinge on my skin and dreadlocks, traveling at, 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning, he immediately assumed I was drug trafficking, which in my mind is like, that's not what I would assume, because no one would be stupid enough to be driving around at 2 in the morning with brown skin and dreadlocks carrying a trunk full of drugs. Anyway, that's besides the point. The guy comes up to me and he says, he didn't ask me. He opens my door. He goes, give me consent to search your car. He didn't say, hey, do you consent to me to letting us search your car? He didn't say that. He said, give me consent. See, notice the language here. Most people probably just say yes. You know, like he was literally being forceful with the language just to try to undermine my rights.
Right, of course,
yeah. And me being the guy that knows about, you know, all the rights and all that crap because I study police brutality all the time and report on all these stories, I said, no, I don't consent. And he goes, okay, well, sit tight. And within like several seconds, they had a K-9 unit behind my car. The K-9 jumped up on my trunk, and the guy goes, all right, well, you don't have the right to consent any longer. He's like, I got probable cause to conduct a warrantless search of your vehicle now. Get the hell out of your – take your keys out of your ignition, get out of your car. That's what he told me. And I was like, well, then why were you asking me to, you know, consent? And you know what the guy said? It's like, we're trying to be nice here. That's what he told me. He's like, we're trying to be nice. I'm like, oh, that real nice of you to go. And, you know, I'm sitting there at 2 in the morning, tired, in a rush, just trying to get somewhere where I can go to sleep. And you basically ripped me out of my car. Now, I didn't, you know, they didn't forcibly grab me and pull me out. You know, they just told me to get out. And at that point, after they violated my, my Fourth Amendment right to not being searched without a warrant and stuff, which I tried to flex, you know, they overrode that with a loophole or, you know, whatever you want to call it, a right with a condition or, you know, whatever you want to call that. There's a loophole in it. And that's what they did. And they pulled me out. They opened my car. They searched through it. It was two officers and a dog, and they had the dog inside my car going through my stuff. They opened my trunk. I had all my luggage and stuff nicely folded. I had all my stuff organized. They ripped all that stuff out. They stuffed it back in, didn't even bother zipping the bags back up. They lifted up my trunk compartment to where, you know, the spare tire's at. They messed all everything up. Like, I literally am have to go out there, waste an hour of my time to go pull all the crap out of my trunk and reorganize my trunk so that it's not all messed up. And, you know, then at that point, they weren't even done. They were like, okay, I was standing up and I was like, you know, I was visibly kind of not upset, but just disgusted at the fact that I was having my rights just violated like that. Especially as a person who, you know, prides himself in knowing my rights and knowing, you know, my limits and knowing the limits of law enforcement and stuff. You know, I was upset seeing them go through my stuff without me consenting, and I knew, and I tried to flex my rights, but you know, that just isn't good enough at this point. And they weren't done after that. They pulled my car over to the side. They x-rayed my vehicle with like this, they had this truck with an x-ray machine built in the back of it. They drove by my car with the x-ray machine. Meanwhile, they literally drove the x-ray truck right in front of all of the people that were standing right there that were also having their car searched. Like, literally, the x-rays were going right at us, dude. And that stuff is, like, horrible for you. And I'm not even joking you. My balls hurt for a couple of hours after that. I got here and, like, they didn't – my balls didn't feel good when I went to bed. When I woke up, they felt better. But I shit you not, I had pain in my testicles because of the x-ray radiation that was coming out of that machine. They x-rayed both sides of my car. You know, and at that point, the cop, you know, I wasn't traveling with any drugs or anything like that. So at that point, the Border Patrol, the DHS guy, he's like, okay, man, you're good to go. You know, and I grabbed my keys, and he felt that, he had to explain himself. And one of the things I noticed about this cop is that, first of all, he was a Mexican dude. And when he was going through my trunk, I was looking at him, and I could tell that he felt bad about doing what he was doing. Like, I can see it on his face that he felt guilty. I mean, how would you feel if you went to somebody's house or you went into someone else's car and just said, you know what, dude, like, hey, DB, I don't believe that you are telling me what you're telling me. I think you're lying. Let me dig through your stuff because I don't believe you. Like, what kind of asshole would do that? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I could see it on the guy's face. He felt bad about what he was doing, but I could tell he was doing it to make a paycheck. You know what I'm saying? Right. And afterwards, he felt that he had to explain himself to me. He's like, you know what? He's like, you know, I didn't do anything illegal. Like, it, and that was the weird thing. It's like, maybe he did do something illegal. Maybe when I said I don't consent, maybe he shouldn't have done what he done. But whatever. The first thing he told me is like, I didn't do anything illegal, man. Like, you know, there's laws on the books. He's like, and the reason I'm doing this is because people like you want to be safe from, you know, immigrants and from drugs and stuff. And you know me, like, I am like the most open person to drug decriminalization, drug legalization in the world. I think all drugs should be legalized. I don't think the drug war works. And I don't think building huge ass walls on the border, building arbitrary lines between people, I don't think that works either. Like, I'm a pro immigration. I'm a pro drug legalization person. So his talking point was just went over my, you know, went in one ear and out the other. I told him, man, I'm like, dude, I don't care about immigrants. I think immigrants are fine. If people want to travel between countries, let them do it. And I don't think drugs should be illegal. So, you know, you're not keeping me safe from that stuff, because I don't care about that stuff. And then he just went, okay, well, you know, a law is a law, and, you know, this, that, and the other. And I told him, now, I'm like, you know what, dude? I'm like, just because there's a law doesn't mean that it's
justified.
I don't – yeah, exactly. You took the word right out of my mouth. Just because there's a law in the books that says that, you know, you got a loophole to remove my rights and do this and do that doesn't mean that it's okay. Doesn't mean that it's actually based on a moral standing. Doesn't mean that it's ethical. You know, U.S. citizens are supposed to, according to the Constitution – and I say that with air quotes – we're supposed to enjoy a certain right to privacy and a certain right to freedom and the right to not be molested and to not be searched without a warrant or without giving someone a reason to want to search you and stuff. And I mean, just because of my appearance, they literally decided that they were going to search me down and all that stuff. So, I mean, that to me was big. But the bigger thing here, and this is what I want to tie back into Memorial Day, I want to tie back into all this rhetoric from the government about our military interventions, is that the unfortunate truth of the matter is that your freedom in the United States, it's conditional. It only applies as long as you do what you're told. you're free as long as you don't break the law, or as long as you don't challenge the norms, or just fall into line like the rest of the sheep that probably go through that border crossing. And anytime a guy says, hey, can I search your vehicle? And they say, yeah, go ahead, man. Like, shit, whatever. I don't care about my privacy. Go ahead and dig through my underwear and my wife's thongs in her backpack. And yeah, whatever. Big deal. But, you know, I actually give a shit. I don't want somebody. I find it a little bit unnerving when someone digs through my shit. I mean, anybody else out there feel that way? I mean, or is it just me? If you want to call in, let us know, like, what you think of this situation. Because I posted it on my profile earlier today, and I had a lot of reactions to it. If you want to call in, let us know what you think. 718-717-8296 to get on the line with us. I mean, this, to me, just goes to show that our constitutional rights are conditional. There's loopholes built into them. I mean, look at the NSA spying and the metadata and all that crap. I mean, all of that stuff is unconstitutional, but they find little loopholes. They have all these huge lawyers. I mean, shit, Obama himself is a lawyer. The Republicans are drafting the neoconservative Republicans are drafting a third party lawyer to run for president, which would be literally the only way they could hand Hillary Clinton the nomination, which is what it seems like these neocons are trying to do. But they have all these lawyers where they're trying to find loopholes in how to screw the U.S. citizen out of his rights that people die for. And they tell these guys that are going to fight in overseas, and that they recruit people in the military, and they tell them, hey, you're going to go join up in the military, and you're going to fight for your freedom, for your family, and for your friends. And that's nice, and I wish that were true, but the fact of the matter is,
it's not.
We don't have rights, dude. You only have rights as long as you stay in line. If you get out of line, your rights go out the window because there's some lawyer in some back room that cooked up a loophole where they can just take it out from under you. And the biggest example is with the NSA. Go ahead, Manny.
Well, Nick, let me make a comment on that. Basically, welcome to my world again. 8 out of 10 times I get pulled over to secondary through immigration. 8 out of 10. 8 out of 10 also, you know, I get pulled at the airport for secondary, stuff like that. So that's why I have a problem that if Donald Trump becomes president, you imagine if this is happening 8 out of 10 already, what's going to happen to me? 10 out of 10, you know, every time it's just, you know, and it's kind of really sad, you know, because, I mean, it's just as long as you don't mess up the status quo, you're okay. Now, as an activist and stuff like that, and people know that I'm an activist and stuff like that, that doesn't help me any either, and it's not going to help me either when Donald Trump takes over the presidency, you know what I mean? And so it's time for us to all go to Costa Rica, okay? Including DB.
There we go, man. One-way ticket. I'm ready. DB's going with us. But anyway, yeah, those are my two cents. I mean, Johnny, as a veteran, what do you make of what I just said? Because that's literally what I'm feeling right now.
Well, you know, I don't think that's right to just step on the Constitution and to just step on the rights of American citizens. I don't care if you're a veteran. I don't care if you're something different than a veteran or you know, something that's out of the ordinary in the country we live in. You know, this is a melting pot of culture where we all come together and are supposed to fight for our freedoms. And it seems like every day our freedoms are getting taken away more and more, and we're just sitting by and letting it happen, and it's disgusting to me. You know, I don't think you should have ever been searched. I think that the fact that you vocalized your rights as a United States citizen is I think that's detrimental to the argument that, you know, you don't have any rights once you have probable cause. But, you know, the reality is, even if you have probable cause, what's that probable cause ultimately constitute in terms of when it's okay and not okay to search you?
Exactly, man. And, you know, that just it really, really pisses me off because these politicians tell us that people are going to serve and to protect freedoms, and it seems like it's all a charade. We got a caller on the line from okay, the caller just dropped. We got a caller that keeps calling in and hanging up. So if you want to call in, make sure you stay on because it takes us a few minutes to get to you. But, you know, it seems like they're selling us this stuff falsely, and it's about damn time that we start talking about it and standing up for these rights and stuff that we're supposed to have. Because I'm tired of being made to feel like I'm a criminal, whether it's just by some asshole cop that's rolling down the street in my neighborhood when I'm walking to the store, or the other day I was riding my bike and I got pulled over for riding my bike on the sidewalk. I mean, yeah. Literally where I live, there's no bike lane, and you ride your bike on the street. I've already almost been hit a couple times. I want to ride my bike and get out and get some fresh air and not waste gas, and you name it. I literally go on the sidewalk because I'm not trying to get hit by a car, and I get pulled over for that. I mean, it's just gets ridiculous where everything has to be sanctioned. Everything needs a permit. Everything is taxed. You can literally get a ticket for riding your bike on the sidewalk. I mean, what freedom is left that we're out there fighting for is what I'm wondering at this point. It's like, dude. There's very little left. In fact, the United States has slid on several different rankings, whether it's press freedom, economic freedom, social freedom. We're now flunking and actively sliding on the scale on pretty much every criteria. Press freedom, I think we've slid to, 14th place or even further. Economic freedom, we're way down on the list. I mean, plenty of countries have more social freedom than the United States at this point. I mean, God, it's just become such a lie. When is it going to happen? When are we going to get to the point when more people figure it out? Because right now, everyone's got their heads in the sand, and I don't know if they're just too comfortable. I don't know if they're just afraid. Or if it's – maybe it's like the Jews in Nazi Germany where they just think that, it'll never happen. It's just, Hitler, he's not actually going to do what he said. They're not going to round us up and kill us. You guys are – you crazy conspiracy theorists are telling us they're going to round us up and kill us. Come on. Get real. I mean, I don't know if it's – I honestly don't think it's going to get that extreme in the United States. I pray to God that it doesn't. But at what point do we draw the line and say, you know what? Enough is enough. Like, we can't even drive down the street no more. If you're black, you can't even drive down the street without getting shot. And if you're anyone else, you can't drive down the freeway without running into a checkpoint and getting criminalized for nothing. I mean, it makes me sick, dude, to live in the United States where 75% of the people still believe in American exceptionalism and think that we're the freest and best and this and that and the other. And it's, dude, yeah, it is nice here because we are the capital of a huge empire. But when that empire slips, there's going to be a big-time rude awakening. I think it'd be better that if people awakened now than when it's like, okay, the empire is gone. Now you're really going to have to deal with this stuff. I think now would be a better time to start realizing what the hell's going on.
Definitely.
Well, Nick, I just saw it firsthand on Friday, for instance. I'll give you a good example. We had 1,000 cops. That's a lot of damn fucking cops out there. You know what I mean? That's a lot of damn cops. And a lot of them, with their gear. I mean,
you're talking about the Trump rally in San Diego. There was 1,000 cops out there?
Yeah, yeah. That's a lot of cops. And one of the things that was that they had a press conference. Barrio Logan and all the activists down there in San Diego, they had a press conference on Tuesday because the attack, it started at Barrio Logan. That's where everything started and stuff like that, because they knew that they were going to have a lot of people marching across because they had it blocked, but then they saw all these people coming and they just let these people through. I mean, it was a march from Barrio Logan all the way down and stuff like that, And then all of a sudden, and this is where I believe that people should look into the, their rights in the Constitution and look at the laws because all of a sudden, 35 people were arrested. Why? Because they declared a state of emergency. What are the how do you say that word? How do you have the power to, because I mean, you can just say state of emergency and then start arresting people. When are you allowed to, call a state of emergency and who does it, And that's what gets me kind of really fired up about stuff. Now, there's a guy that's running for city district attorney in San Diego, Brian Pease. He was one of the protesters that got arrested at Barrio Logan, and he's having a press conference tomorrow at 10 in the morning down there in San Diego at City Hall and stuff like that. And so, I mean, it just, I mean, you see pictures of Friday where these cops looked like military. They didn't look like cops. They looked like military.
Yeah, there were sheriffs down there that were dressed. They weren't dressed in black like the regular cops. They were dressed in green. They were wearing helmets, goggles, and yep. They were armed with assault rifles.
Yeah, exactly, and stuff like that. So you're looking at all that, and you're looking at different guards. You're looking at U.S. Marshals. You're looking at Secret Service. I mean, it was just a circus out there and stuff like that. And, you know, that's why I took a piñata. You know, took a piñata, and then some of the activists honored me by hanging that thing. After we busted the piñata, they hung it up there in one of those, you know, that pole that holds that those gates for the railroad, you know, and stuff like that, you know. And we really, you know, put some pressure on the city in front of the tourists, because in front of the tourists, everybody kind of backs off. That's why they did it at Barry Logan, you know. And so the bottom line is that it was so chaos out there that the Green Line was not running for a while. Let's put it that way. Imagine stopping the Green Line from even operating.
Yeah, they stopped the train, the trolleys from running. I mean, you know, the thing is that, you know, with my example of last night, what happened to me as just a, you know, anecdotal example of the fascistic leanings that are already going on in the United States. I mean, people are like, oh my God, Trump's going to bring in fascism. It's like, well, sorry, dude, you're a bit late to the parade here. It's already here and it's already happening in many, many ways. I mean, the militarized police, the checkpoints, the, you know, you name it, dude. I mean, we're already doing a lot of this stuff. But this election here, and the reason why it's so monumental, is that if it comes down to Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump, this is literally going to usher in what could very well turn into a legitimate police state. I mean, right now we've got the symptoms. I mean, you know, we've seen all the riots, the protests, the police killings, and all the heavy-handed police stuff. Manny, just like you mentioned on Friday here, just in San Diego, 1,000 cops out there. So at one point towards the end, the cops were outnumbering the protesters. You know, we've already got this heavy-handed police state tendency or lean, whatever you want to call it. But, I mean, if Trump becomes a nominee, which is pretty much guaranteed at this point, they've already shown that it's already been shown that his presence is going to invoke a huge opposition, which is going to be crushed like it was in San Diego with thousands and thousands of heavy-handed police. And then on the other end of the spectrum, if Hillary is the nominee, and if she winds up winning the election over Trump, and it seems like maybe it was stolen from him, you're going to see the opposite happen, where it's not the anti-Trump people out there going wild and trying to shut him down. It's going to be the pro-Trump people out there trying to shut down Hillary, because they're going to feel like they've been robbed. And that is also another very, very real, potentially real reality. Yeah. And I'll tell you what. This election right here is going to be ushering in what could very well be a police state. I got a caller on the line quickly. We only have about a minute and a half left from 801 area code. How's it going? You're on the anti-media. Do you want to chime in on this conversation?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, what do you make of these, you know, fascistic leanings? And, you know, what do you make of the anti-Trump crowds? And what do you think is going to happen if the election is stolen from Trump and given to Hillary?
I don't know, man. You're making some very good points. I mean, fascistic leanings, that's a pretty perfect term for everything. Pretty interesting. I'm actually also a San Diego resident, and I watched the whole thing go down, and it was very interesting to see people applauding kind of police state-type tactics. I mean, like you had mentioned before, you got these guys that are dressed in black that are SDPD and they're armed for a riot, and then you got these other guys that are dressed in green and they're carrying automatic weapons. Very complex situation to watch, and also to watch devolve. I mean, I didn't think it was that bad, but apparently it really devolved into a really bad situation where, you know, he talked about Brian Peace being arrested and some of those things. So I don't know exactly how to take it, but yeah, there's some very interesting things going on in that regard.
Thanks for calling in. That's the end of the show. Anti-Media Radio. Peace out, everybody.
Yo, here we go. Go through the stereo.